Hi, I'm Bella Gandhi, founder of Smart Dating Academy and your host of this beautiful podcast. We're here to bring more love into your life, regardless of if you're single, if you're married, if you're thinking about becoming single, if you're thinking about becoming married or finding the lid to your pot. And we're going to bring more life into that love that you have or you want. You might have seen me on Good Morning America or Steve Harvey or the Today Show or 100 other places, but I'm so happy that you are here with us because we're going to make your life and your love better. Smart daters, welcome back. We're going to jump right into this episode. I am so excited to have with us today Natalie Liu, who is awesome, and she's beautiful, and she's British. She is a boundaries and relationship coach who is the creator of one of the longest running self-help blogs in the world, baggagereclaim.com. And she knows a lot about emotional baggage, how to identify it, how to unpack it. And we're going to talk about all things today. Natalie, welcome to the Smart Dating Academy podcast. So good to have you.
So good to be here.
And we're overseas. We're taping in Chicago and you're in the UK. So I love the technology.
Oh, yes. It gets us to be able to connect like this for sure.
Well, good. Well, tell us a little bit, you know, about your background, how you got into this, and then let's just get into helping our smart daters unpack their stuff and learn new things.
Well, I am 46, so I grew up in the 80s and 90s, mostly in Dublin in Ireland. That's where I spent most of my childhood, was in Ireland after growing up initially in England. And so I grew up in a time where there was a lot of dodgy advice that was being given about dating and relationships in general, but specifically to women. I came up in that era of women can have it all, and also the rules, and also there was all the TV and the music, culture. It was a confusing time, to be fair. It still is, just in different ways. And so I started a blog, a personal blog, in 2004. So I've been doing this whole writing and talking about relationships online for 20 years now. And I started with a personal blog called Tired of Men and Other Things That Drive a 20-something Around the Twist. Because I was so, in the end, I was really talking about how tired I was of myself, because my whole life revolved around men and getting a relationship. And I was baffled as to why was it that despite the fact that I said that I wanted to be in a relationship and that I wanted to, you know, be with a quote unquote nice guy, that I was always with the emotionally unavailable bad boys, the ones who, you know, were very hot out the gate. And then suddenly, mysteriously, they suddenly remembered, oh, I don't have time for a relationship, or I'm not over my ex, or whatever it was.
Or just and ghosting. About, or just leave. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, funny enough, I feel that that is far more prevalent than it was then. But still, there were the disappearing acts back then. Mm. It's just really accentuated by the style of communication or lack of communication now in modern times. And so about a year or so into writing about my own experiences, I started Baggage Reclaim, really as an antidote to all of that dodgy advice that was out there. You know, the stuff that was on the magazines, like Cosmopolitan, 50 ways to please your man. Everything was about, like, you want a relationship, you want to figure out what's going on in your life, you want to figure out what's going wrong, you need to find a way to please the guy. You know, it was this very sort of heteronormative narrative around dating, but it was always about put on sexy lingerie, you know, light some candles, make some dinner, you know, pull out the sex moves. And it's like, I'd like to understand why I keep getting into these terrible relationships, why I'm always with variations Amen. Of the same guy. And so that's why I started Baggage Reclaim. I thought that I was weird. So honestly, up until when I started writing about my life online, my experiences in exploring relationships, I was like, there's something unlovable about me. There is something that about me that means that men find me really attractive, and then they find a reason to not want a relationship or to mistreat me. And obviously that was a whole story in my head. It's all my daddy and my mommy issues playing out. And I experienced a bit of I guess what you call it, an awakening prior to starting Baggage Reclaim, where I talked out loud about these feelings I was having about myself and my relationships and found that I was inundated with, well, this is 2005, so you're not getting all of what you get today. So it was all by comments and email, but people were like, you are talking about me. You're talking Aww. About my life, my experiences. And I was like,
Wow.
That's weird, because I always thought I was a weirdo. And it turns out there are a lot of us that struggle with feelings of abandonment, who have a pattern of being involved with emotionally unavailable people, and who on some level spend their lives people-pleasing. And so I got so much out of talking about my experiences online and connecting with people that I wanted to help at least one person avoid what I had been through, or to help them navigate out of it. And here I am all these years later. And clearly I've helped more than a couple of people.
Clearly. I love that so much. And I think you're right. There's so much bad information out there, and it drives me crazy as well. Do I need to step more into my feminine? I'm like, you know what? You need to fix your picker. Who are you picking? You should be adored. Yeah. And you don't have to change yourself. You just have to change the choices you're making.
Amen. Take it to the church. I mean, I think that's when we talk about dating and relationships, I think a lot of what is out there has really messed with our heads. It's the culture of dating, the culture of relationships. And even though we are certainly more fluid than we ever have been with relationships and dating and sexuality, at the end of the day, a lot of us are running around like headless chickens, repeating outdated programming. Like, you'd be amazed, because I think often when I talk to people who would be in what we might call those heteronormative relationships, they imagine that the problems of dating that they're experiencing are very specific to that. Except for that I've spoken to lots of people in same-sex relationships, and they're still coming up against the same thing.
Same stuff, 100%.
Yeah, same stuff over and over and over again, right down to, I think some would imagine that when you get into a same-sex relationship, for instance, that you wouldn't have these kind of like one person being in this predefined role and the other doing this. No, same stuff still plays out. And it's this idea that if you can just meet somebody, please them enough, make yourself look really attractive, you will be picked. And it's all about being picked. Do all the right things to be picked. And particularly for women, that tends to be, please make sure that you avoid saying no and that you say yes as much as possible. Be meek, be mild, be sweet. And then it's like, but don't be too frigid, but also don't be too sexy. And don't be too this and don't be too, it's exhausting.
Exhausting.
It is exhausting. And it's like, don't have sex on the first date, but make sure you have sex soon enough or you're going to turn them off. And it's like, we're trying to work out, like, how many dates do we need to go on before it's okay to have sex, or it's okay to ask what's going on. And all of this speaks to how we have been socialized and conditioned into some really, really messy ideas about what it takes to create mutually fulfilling, loving relationships. And also just really, really messed up ideas about what it is to date people and what it is that we actually need from ourselves and from our relationships.
You're right. I mean, society, you know, I would say evolution sort of steers us to do things that don't make sense for us. Social media and media also drive negative messages. And then you combine that with what we witness at home with our own families of origin, and you have the recipe for a potential mess, right? And if your picker isn't broken, when I say this to people, I'm like, that doesn't mean you're broken.
It means
there's so much shit that has happened in your life. How could you pick the right person? How could you? So let's take it back to ground zero, wipe the slate clean, and look at, who are you And who's a partner that would make you happy? Who is a good lid to your pot? And so I'm so with you on all of this. You don't need to shapeshift yourself into what you think someone else wants, whether you're in a heteronormative relationship, whether you're bi, whether you're gay, it doesn't matter, right? You want someone who is a good, and I use the phrase lid to your pot, because a pot is complete on its own. Okay.
Amen.
Amen. You could do a hell of a lot with a pot, but a lid just gives you that much more flexibility to do other things. And when, and it's just, it pairs really nicely, but the pot's fine on its own, but it's a little better with the lid. That's it.
Yeah. I think that, you know, when I think about some of the, the ideas that we have, you know, there was that movie, Jerry Maguire, very popular back in the 90s, Tom Cruise, Renée Zellweger, and, I can't remember the other guy's name, but she said that there's that line, you know, you complete me. Oh my God. I remember watching it at the time and thinking, give me a break. But so many of us are looking around for somebody or sometimes something to complete us, not realizing that actually that reinforces this idea that there is something missing from us, that there, this other person out there is our missing part. And that's a lot to put on someone and a relationship. There's also what I call the pretty woman fantasy. Now, don't get me wrong. I always call it my favorite problematic movie, Pretty Woman.
Like, totally.
The soundtrack.
Who doesn't love it?
Oh my! I mean, I love the film, banging soundtrack. Also, you know, a lot, myself, my friends were like, yeah, it's our favorite problematic movie. Because like, when we think about the themes, we're like, oh, come on. But I noticed that there was this shift after Pretty Woman, where people have the pretty woman fantasy, that you can go from being booty call, casual relationship of some sort, situationship, or what I sometimes call a situationship. And you can go from that to he or she's climbing up the ladder, Vivian, you know, with the flowers, and you will live happily ever after. And I think that Pretty Woman and other, you know, films of that nature have done a lot to contribute to this idea that, oh, you know, you can just sort of do for yourself into any situation that you want, and it'll all work out because your prince will ultimately come and save you. I think a lot of us are actually waiting for somebody to come and rescue us. And, you know, one of my favorite quotes of all time is from Chris Rock, the comedian. And he said something along the lines of, when you first meet somebody, it's not them that you're meeting, it's their representative. Yeah. And I think that a lot of people pretend to be something that they're not, because the culture has taught us that that is what dating is, that you put on your finest drawers, you make yourself look banging, you bring out your best jokes, you amp up your personality somewhat, you maybe exaggerate your job, you leave out the bits and pieces of your life that you think are less palatable, a bit like when you're showing your apartment or your house, you know, for sale or for rent, and you shove all of the stuff into the cupboards or whichever else. And I get why we do that to an extent. It's just that I'd say the overwhelming majority of people don't stop doing that. And so what happens is they start off by in these modern times, typically chatting online. Sometimes they meet in person. And then with any luck, they will go on a date. And on the date, they're not interacting in this sort of back and forth in this dialogue. Instead, they're really attuned to trying to pick up signals about what the other person is looking for, so that they can then try to portray themselves as it, so that the person will then turn around and say, okay, I want to have more dates. And then it'll be like, they'll have more dates, and then they might pick me for a relationship, and then they might pick me for an engagement, and so on and so on. But that means that we're always oriented to this question of, am I the right person for you? Instead of asking ourselves, are you the right person for me?
Absolutely. If you guys could watch the YouTube, I'm like, yes, Preach. This is exactly right. Who is the right person for you? And there's going to be some of that staging in the beginning, right? Because you want to put your best foot forward. Because like Brené Brown very adroitly says, you know, in the beginning, you know, too much information, and it's like it's oversharing ultimately. This whole concept of vulnerability and putting it out there, I am who I am. It's like, okay, that's too early to disclose all of that, right? That there is a stair step with regards to how you want to essentially unpack yourself long term. Because if you come in and put it all up front, this is who I am. And I have a lot of clients, and I'm sure that you've heard a lot of this too, Natalie. They're like, well, let me tell you everything up front so you can make a decision whether I'm good enough. I've had cancer twice, and I've been married four times, and I've got five kids through these people. And it's like, oh my God, that is enough to make anybody like go, wow, okay. The biggest sin there is just the oversharing in and of itself, because people will leave that going, man, if that person disclosed all of that on date one, what are they going to have to tell me on date 10? Like, are they a serial killer? Did they chop people up and throw them in the river? So there is a way that you want to do this with authenticity. And I think the most important thing that I love about what you're saying is you are not there to shapeshift into what you think this person wants. You are not there to be picked. You want to get the second date, but you're also most importantly evaluating the dateability of this other person. And are they a good lid to your very cute, complete little pot?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, the example that she gave there, it's not really the information that the person has shared there. It is the intention that's driving it. Like, you know, I remember teaching a workshop in New York years ago, and I had somebody get up in that workshop and more or less say, not the specific information that you had said there, but more or less say, when I meet somebody, I basically tell them all the things that I don't like up front, and, you know, who and what I'm about up front. And is that me being boundaried? And I was like, no, it's not. You are sharing that information in that manner, for instance, on date one or whenever it was, because you are trying to get ahead of the curve. You're trying to protect yourself from getting hurt. The intention behind it doesn't come from a place of being secure in yourself and being okay with whatever your past has been. It comes from this place of, you think you're going to be ditching me further down the line when you find out about me. No, I'm going to lay it out for you up front right here now. And so that you know exactly what I'm about. But the energy behind that, the intention behind that, you're not sharing from a place of genuinely being yourself. You're sharing from this place of, I'm judging myself for this. I kind of suspect that you might judge me for this. Let's get this out of the way right now. And that's not a great place to start out from in dating from. Obviously, if the subject matter were to come up naturally as part of the date one conversation, okay. Although I'm trying to imagine a scenario where all of that might come up in a date one conversation. But it is this whole thing of, we don't need to pretend to be someone we're not. We also don't need to be focused on trying to become what somebody else is, you know, sort of hinting or even outright stating on a date. Like, as an example, I say to a lot of people, if when you rewind your mental tape and you play back those initial interactions with the person you went on to date or even be in a relationship, you might notice that there are certain things that you said or did or that they said or did earlier on that you go, oh, I see it now. Like, you suddenly realize where things started to take a turn. And a classic example of this is where the exes conversation comes up very early on. And the other party is describing their exes, and they will be like, for instance, oh, she was a psycho, he was needy, they were blah, blah, blah. And it's as if the other person They're sitting there and listening to all this, but they started in their mind, right, note to self, make sure that I don't push too hard, right? Note to self, right? Better make sure that I'm never like too high maintenance, because I wouldn't like them to think that I was a psycho, that I was this. This happens in dating all the time. And I liken dating to, I call it a discovery phase.
Yes.
So dating is a discovery phase for us to get a sense, not just of who the other person seems to be. And I say seems to be for a reason, which I'll come back to in a moment. So not just a sense of who they seem to be, but who we are with them while we are dating. We are getting a superficial sense of who that person is, because in dating, yeah, we do put on our best drawers and, you know, we're trying to put across our best self. And it is once things progress that we kind of relax a bit more into being ourselves and we get a real sense of what that person is about. In that discovery phase, if you're too busy basically trying to audition for the other person and prove that you should be picked, you are not attuned to your needs, desires, expectations, feelings, and opinions in that situation. You're far too oriented to the other person. And what I always say to people is, in this stage where you are dating, so as in, it's before you've mutually agreed that you're going to like maybe exclusively see each other, or you're going to continue seeing each other, or that you're actually going to be in a relationship. At this point, neither one of you have any skin in the game.
None.
You know, honestly, so many people behave like, there's a fire. The whole world is going to burn down if you can't turn this into something. And it's like, if everybody has the potential to be the one, that says more about you and where you're at with dating than it does about the other person. So this is an opportunity to get an initial sense. It's a co-interview process, I liken it to. You know, like with when we go job hunting, it's the same mistake that people make. There's so many parallels between work and dating. It is frightening. But when we interview for a job, a big mistake that people make is that they are so focused on selling themselves to the employer that they do not ask enough questions to get a sense of whether the job, the company is a right fit for them. The same thing happens in dating because they're too busy putting on a performance of a lifetime. This isn't over here. It used to be called the X Factor. I think in the US, it's a pop idol or...
Right.
One with Simon Cowell or one of those.
But American
this
Idol.
This is not American Idol. Yeah. This is dating. If you turn the person into the judge, you know, and you're the auditionee, you are already very, very much on the back foot. And what happens is then people say to me, oh, but you know, we have so much in common, Natalie. Oh, we were chatting. I was looking at their profile and then we were like DMing or we had like a few calls and we are absolutely perfect for each other. You got all of that from a profile and a few calls? Like, that's too big a jump. Like, way too big a jump. At this stage of dating, you can assess for incompatibility. You can get very clear indications on where you are not a fit, but you cannot concretely say, from chatting with somebody, you know, a DM, text, whatever, or like a couple of, oh yeah, we are perfect. We share the same values. Because those that staircase you referred to earlier on, it's called intimacy. Yeah. And intimacy takes time and experience. And you can only genuinely get a sense of compatibility and whether you share values through intimacy. If you can't get to intimacy, all those things you think you know about somebody and how compatible you are, you're just making that up. Because compatibility is about shared core values and whether your emotional needs can be met. And if you miss obvious signs that this relationship is not going to meet your emotional needs, or that you are not on the same page about where each of you are headed and what's important to you in life, you will make a relationship. You will even continue dating somebody who is very, very clear that this is not the person for you, but you'll keep going, yeah, but we have so much fun together and the sex is great. And it feels like we're having a really good time. And if, you know, they say that they really like me, yeah, but do you actually share core values in terms of character and the direction in which you're headed in life? Because if you don't, your emotional needs are not going to be met, whether you're just dating or whether you've progressed into a relationship.
I love that. And tell me, what right into this topic. What do you think is the connection of emotional availability and people pleasing?
So of all the subjects that emotional unavailability is something that has been at the core of my work, because I was somebody who I saw myself as being mismonogamous. I was always in a relationship and always wanting to be in a relationship, just baffling as to how I could be with so many emotionally unavailable men. Like, where was this all coming from?
Where is this coming from? How am I attracting all these bad people?
Yeah. I mean, and I started to think, have I got like, you know, like the Bates Motel sign, like one of those motel signs, you know, it lights up and somehow it's like, I don't know it's there, but it's like sending out some sort of like, hey, you know,
radar, she likes sonar. Yeah.
And what I realized, I was like, oh, I'm the common denominator here. I'm the only person who shows up to every act, scene, and moment of my life. So that doesn't mean that I'm responsible for whatever these guys have been up to. But given that I am the common denominator, what am I bringing into each of these situations? What are the feelings, the thoughts, the habits? What am I bringing into each of these? And what I very quickly realized is that... you know, what do they say? What's that saying? Water seeks its own level. So there's no such thing as you're being emotionally available and being with an emotionally unavailable person. The two things don't go together because you're operating at the level of which you can each meet each other, which is at unavailability. And you don't realize how much you sort of align and water yourself down to accommodate that. And so as I was exploring this, it also became clear that what a lot of people do as part of the way we've been taught to date and forge and sustain relationships is that we use people pleasing to try to convince people out of their emotional unavailability. And so we will be the what I call the buffer, which, you know, you act like an emotional airbag, you know, for your partner, or you will be, you know, the other woman or the other guy. And so you're trying to convince them to pick you over their existing partner, or you will allow this person to like boomerang in and out of your life because you're thinking, well, you know, they keep going away, but they also keep coming back. So if I just please them enough, then maybe they will actually stay around for long enough. Sometimes you might have what I call Florence Nightingale, you know, renovator inclinations, where you gravitate to relationships where they're like fixer-upper projects, where it's almost like on some level you need there to be some sort of problem. And this is all people-pleasing. And people-pleasing is the suppressing, repressing of our needs, desires, expectations, feelings, and opinions to put other people's ahead of ours so that we can gain attention, affection, approval, love, and validation, but also to avoid conflict, you know, criticism, additional stress, disappointment, loss, rejection, or even what a lot of us might call abandonment. Now, when we're people pleasing, that's suppressing and repressing of ourselves, that we can't be intimate. We can't be emotionally available and also be very actively and chronically people pleasing at the same time. So it is no wonder that those of us, and there are a lot of us, because it was the way of life, it has been the culture for hundreds of years for us to be obedient and compliant and to do the expected thing. It is no wonder that so many of us go from childhood, where we're people pleasing, to now trying to, you know, recreate those dynamics inadvertently through our romantic relationships. And it's like, well, if I can just please this person, they will pick me. And they will feel bad about those times when they have me waiting around or subsisting on crumbs. And they were like, let me make you my wife. Let me give you this relationship at last. Let me commit to you. But of course, the people pleasing just causes us to wind up settling for less in our relationships. We feel bad about ourselves. We continue settling for less because we feel bad about ourselves. And round and round and round we go in this frustrating cycle. And I know that so many of us associate people pleasing with being like loving and kind, like it's a virtuous thing, but it's actually trauma.
Be, right, but not always. And not,
yeah,
so that's
the thing is, yeah, you can you can be kind and considerate and generous and giving and not have to sacrifice yourself, right? There are people who do things for others who, for instance, might stay behind at work sometimes or do extra for their family. Or yes, sometimes put a loved one's needs, for instance, a romantic partner's, ahead of theirs. But they don't do it because on some level, they're afraid of what will happen if they say no. They don't do it because they associate what they're doing with their worthiness. So they are trying to create worthiness by being pleasing. They don't do it because they're like, oh my God, you will abandon me. So there is a very, very clear difference. And what happens is actually with people pleasing is that we misuse our good qualities. And this is then when I hear the battle cry of, I've been used. And I get it, because it doesn't mean that we haven't been used. But the reason why we have also been used is that we tolerate that situation because of what we thought we might get back.
Absolutely.
So it's like, I know that this thing is happening. I know you're not treating me that well. I know you're not really available. But if I play sweet here, if I play my cards right, if I'm real nice here, this could all work out really well for me and you might pick me. And then as time goes on and the person doesn't do that, we then feel aggrieved because it's like, well, I've just laid myself out here and I've busted up my boundaries and this is all I've got to show for it. And that doesn't mean that the person isn't wrong. Of course, it's not right for the person to use us, but we are often willing to exploit ourselves, willing to be used for the sake of not being alone. To say, okay, well, I'm dating somebody. To say, okay, well, there's still this possibility, betting on potential. Sometimes just to hold on to somebody, this title of relationship or marriage or whatever it is, and thinking, okay, this will all work out well for me. And then feeling resentful when we realize that we're not going to get the payoff.
I'm so with you. And let me ask you, I think the question we're probably all wrestling with right now, what's the antidote to this? How do you create your worth at this point? Because we all have that wounded person inside of us, whether you mm-hmm. have the greatest parents on earth or whether you didn't, right?
Yeah.
Like, where is that? Like, how do we do that?
So this is it's the B word. the B word is the key into it all here, because when we have even a little bit more boundaries, a lot shifts for us. I remember being exactly the person that I am talking about here. So when I'm talking about this stuff, I'm not saying it from this place of like, oh, like I had it all like right. Because who wants to hear all of that? I know this because I've lived it. Childhood, adulthood. And it was being really unwell, like seriously unwell, where, you know, very damning prognosis, and listening to a consultant basically say, you know, you're going to be dead by 40, la, 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 la. And I suddenly thought to myself, hold on a second, you spend all of your time, energy, effort, everything chasing guys and working really hard and trying to please your family. And now this person's basically saying to you that you could be dead in just over 10 years.
Oh my God.
And that was a real shock. To
a
the
wake
system.
Up call.
Yeah. And I had been involved with a colleague who had a girlfriend, and I nearly destroyed myself on that relationship. And suddenly I wanted to fight for myself. And do you know what changed everything for me? And I obviously, this is with the benefit of hindsight, because I was feeling my way into this. I always say with, for instance, my work that I've done, I've been like a bit of a crash test dummy, trying out different things. Because remember, I started out doing this stuff where it was very unusual to talk about boundaries back then. Right? That was not the narrative like it is now. But actually starting to take care of and prioritize myself and be really honest with myself about how I was feeling and what I needed and what I wanted changed everything for me. I was Miss Low Maintenance, right? I was the type of person who right up until 2 minutes before the guy I was dating turned up at my door, I was seething about the fact that we had barely been in touch and the audacity of him thinking that I'm just going to go out with him tonight. And then all smiles and everything when he comes to the door. And then I'd be like, oh, well, I can't bring up, you know, all those things that I was annoyed about now because it's going to ruin the mood. So I wouldn't say anything. And then he'd go out the door and I wouldn't hear from him again for maybe weeks afterwards. And the cycle would start again. Having some boundaries, realizing like basic things of caring for myself that I didn't even realize that I wasn't doing, shifted everything because I started aligning with actually who I am, not who I thought I was. You know, not the past and all that baggage, the pain, the fear, the guilt that I was carrying around. I realized if I don't want to be in these relationships anymore, I've got to really start voting for who I am here. I'm going to have to lead from the front because I was always waiting on some level for somebody else to come and rescue me. I was waiting for this guy to come and swoop in, and boundaries changed everything. And let's be clear, when I say boundaries here, boundaries is not just about saying no. It's not, right? It's not just about saying no. I think that's what a lot of people see it as. Oh, it's about saying no. It's about telling people what to do. It's about arguing. No, we are the expression of our boundaries, right? The example I always give is if I ask you what your name is and you say, oh, you know, my name is Bella. And I turn around and go, okay, well, hey, Belle. First of all, when you told me that your name was Bella, you expressed a boundary there when you told me what your name was. That is how simple, but everything we do or don't do, everything we say and don't say, that's our boundaries. We are literally the living embodiment of our boundaries. Whatever we say yes to, we are saying no to something else and vice versa. So they are not separate. This is no is not a dirty word. That's like saying yes is clean and good and no is bad. No, that's not how it works. It's the two sides of the same coin. And when we realize that it's like, you know, in my book, The Joy of Saying No, I say that, you know, yes and no are like the heart and lungs. They pump oxygen-rich blood around the body. And when one is compromised, it affects the other. Yeah. Your lack of no affects your yes. And your yes affects your no, vice versa. So how we get into this is starting to be even a little bit more honest with ourselves about who we are and what, like, coming back into ourselves a bit and asking, why am I doing that? What's my intention here? Honestly, my old intentions, some of them were downright scary. When I realized like, oh my gosh, like sometimes I'm just going around doing stuff because it's like, yeah, well, if I do that thing, then maybe he's going to turn around and do that. And then maybe this will happen a bit. It's like, whoa, like, where are you going with all of that? And what was so interesting is that over the months, as I started to really take care of myself, bearing in mind that I started from a place of health, but I realized, how am I going to start to feel better if I'm still going to basically do the same things with family and with romantic partners? I remember sitting in a room, listening to a relative and suddenly noticing how I felt in my body. And I was like, whoa, how have I never noticed this feeling before? And turning around and going, hold on a second, I need to stop. Actually, I need to just go and get some fresh air. Wow. And realizing this was the story of my life, that I had done this with men. I'd done it with, you know, family, and I'd even sometimes done it with friends and at work. And suddenly I was coming back into my body. And then, you know, guys would ask me out and then we talk. And about 2 seconds into it, it's like, yeah, you know, I just separated from my wife last week. And instead of me being like, oh, poor him, I was like, yeah, see you. And it meant a lot of awkward conversations over the months when exes popped back into my life. It felt like, you know, the language I would use for it now, it felt like the universe was like, oh, so you're saying that you want to get better. And you're saying you're going to be different. Okay, well, let's see how you get on with this. These exes popping up. Oh my, it's a pop quiz.
It happens all the time. I like when people sign up for Smart Dating Academy and they start dating smart, I'm like, exes are like vultures. They're going to detect the sonar that you're giving off, that you're out there, and they're all going to be like, whoo, right?
Yeah.
And you're coming in for the kills. So I'm so
100%.
Sorry.
100%. And I say to people, if you're serious about a serious relationship, accept no substitutes. And what will also happen is life will go, oh, so you say you're ready for a relationship now? Okay, well, let's see what you do with this. And so it might send you the type that you used to be with. And it's like, do you turn around and go, no, or do you continue on? It might send you somebody that's completely different from that. Do you turn around and be like, where's the excitement? Where's the fireworks? You know, why isn't it just like how it used to be before? Or do you go, okay, well, let's see how this goes. And life is not trying to trip you up. It's not a trap. This is like, if you're trying to show yourself and life that you're serious, you know, in what you said you are about. And I didn't know that, I didn't consciously know that that's what I was doing. And honestly, so many exes over those months. And I remember then also dating a few people and having to be like, no, that's not cool that you did that. Or actually, see ya, I'm out of here type of thing. And then sometimes crying afterwards because it felt so overwhelming to suddenly be this person who was putting herself potentially sometimes in a direct line of conflict and voicing what was and wasn't okay. That's my trauma coming up. Because the only reason why we're not saying no is because of our emotional baggage. If we're not saying no when we need, want to, and should, if we're not also saying yes to our needs, desires, expectations, feelings, and opinions, it is only because of our emotional baggage around that why we are avoiding those conversations. And do you know what? I dated a guy for about 3 weeks. I met him in a club. It was his friend I was interested in, his hot friend I was interested in. And he was very pushy, very cocky. And I was like, to my friend, totally not interested in him at all. She's like, don't be so picky. And I remember thinking to myself, So this guy and I dated, he was a doctor. My mom was beside herself when I told her that I was dating a doctor. She was like, oh my gosh. Like, and he did a number of things that where I was like, this guy's a turn off, alarm bells. And finally, we had a bit of a confrontation via phone where he basically called me an idiot. Because at the time, as I mentioned, I had been told, you know, you're seriously ill. And they basically said I needed to go on steroids for life to avoid being dead by the time I was 40. I hadn't gone on steroids, and instead I pursued alternative options. This guy had been qualified for all of a wet week. And he basically says that I'm an idiot for pursuing alternative options, that my only option is to go on steroid medication, proceeded to chastise me. And I suddenly thought, the hell is this? So I turned around and I actually told him all about himself and I finished things. And I came off the phone and I said, do you know what? There's no word of a lie, Bella. I said, do you know what? I am actually fine being single if it means that I never have to go out with guys like this again. I am tired of being involved with men who think that they can tell me about myself and about who I am. And I will not be tolerating any more of this. That was the Wednesday. And on the Saturday, my friend invited me to go to a charity event where it was a games night. And I was like, nah, I think I'm just going to stay home, watch 24, you know, just lie about in my pants, like watching
Jack
TV.
Bauer.
Jack Bauer
makes everything better.
Yeah. So I started chilling. She was like, come on. And unbeknownst to me, my now husband was also being invited to that same event by his friend. And he was going, yeah, I think I'm just going to chill out, stay home, put my feet up also. But each of our friends who were not friends with each other both convinced us to come along. I am playing games with my friend. I look out the corner of my eye and it's like, who's that cute guy over there in the Freddy Krueger looking jumper? And towards the end of the night, we chatted for like really, really briefly. And we were on the way home, my friend and I. And she said, oh, just got a message from my friend. And he's like, who's that cute girl? Can I get a number? And we went on a date. I think it was 2 weeks later because he then had to go away to the US. And we have been together ever since.
I love that. And
I don't share that like as a some fairy tale ending because it's not. Because I don't see relationships end that way. What I am saying to you is that you don't get into the relationship that you need, desire, and truly deserve, like a truly mutually fulfilling, loving relationship, if you're not trying to have that relationship with yourself, and if you're making choices that don't match that. Why are you being with somebody who doesn't want to treat you with love, care, trust, and respect? Like, how is that going to translate into a relationship where your needs are met, where you feel safe and secure, where you're experiencing compatibility? Because the big joke in all of this is it turns out that myself and my husband had actually met before that night. We had first met at least a couple of years before. We'd been at a number of parties together. He even had a photograph of me from a Halloween party from almost 2 years before that. And he didn't realize he did until a few months into it. And it's like, oh my God. And he was there with his then girlfriend. We were not in a place to recognize each other at that time. We were both in different headspaces. By the time each of us met, we had respectively been through different things and experienced some things that when we got together, we were like, we were totally different with each other than we had been in our previous relationships, and we had both grown. But you don't get to that without also navigating all of the other stuff and knowing when to let go, knowing when to say yes, and also knowing when to say no.
I know, and that's so hard for some people, especially women have it hard with all the messaging that we've gotten. If you're not a certain, you know, I see this all the time out there where I am a bigger girl and I've got to take what I can get because nobody's going to want me unless I'm a size zero, and tolerating this kind of stuff. I'm like, look around. Do you only see size zero people in relationships, right? And tolerating things because we feel like, and maybe this comes from internal messaging and external messaging, they're somewhat inextricably linked, right?
Yes.
I'm not pretty enough. So I'm going to hold on to this because this is all I can get.
Yeah. I have seen, like, I call it the settling for crumbs. And I think that, you know, in our culture, in our society, you know, I call it the age of obedience. It, you know, unless you're a child right now, you grew up in the age of obedience. And so we were all, to some degree, taught about the importance of being excessively compliant, i.e. obedient, particularly with authorities. But girls and women were socialized in that context differently because we've all grown up in a patriarchal, you know, sexist, ageist, somewhat racist, homophobic, transphobic, all the isms, all the phobics. But particularly if we speak specifically to the race, the patriarchy, the sexism, the ageism, when you look at how men and women are marketed to, men, when you look at how they're marketed to, it's about enhance the greatness that you already are, that you already have. Women, it is always about buy this thing and you will now be enough. You will be pretty enough. And that attitude is throughout everything. And girls and women are taught you got to be meek and mild and sweet. Don't make waves. Don't be too slutty. Don't be too frigid. You know, don't be too loud. Don't be too this. Don't be too that. Don't be too big. Don't be too small. And when women
are
saying
small in the right places, like it's impossible.
It's exhausting. Like so exhausting. And I will then hear from 20 somethings who are like, there are no, all the guys or whoever want to be like with like late teens. Then I hear from 30 somethings who'd be like, no, they want to be like with 20 somethings. 40 somethings, no, they want to be with the 30, 20 something. 50 somethings, oh no, they want all the guys, they want to be with. And it's like, and then I will also hear the same thing about like the weight. And it's like, a big one. And I hear this particularly when I'm out in America. Oh, there's nobody to date in New York. And yet I'll be walking through New York and I will see couples all over the place. I'll also see married people. I'll see people with kids, you know, and I'm like, well, clearly somebody's getting into a relationship here. And so the everything that we've internalized is real. So the external stuff as well as the stuff that we're saying to each other. And we've also got to challenge it. Like, it's, you know, it's not just, I find it fascinating with dating. And I think this is particularly a female thing where there's this judgment that we do amongst women. And so it's like, well, I look this way, So I should get to date this person, or I look this way, so I shouldn't get to date this person. And then when we see things that challenge that perspective, so for instance, we're like, why is that big woman like with that hot guy out there? Because it's not about her being big. No. And if you're judging her and yourself on that, that's a block. Yeah, there's a story in there. There's a bias in there. And that's interfering with the way that you see yourself, how you're showing up in the world, and the types of people that you engage with, right? And we need to be more loving to ourselves. And that is, look, everything is always easier said than done. But in a world that wants us to always basically be very, very compliant and to hate ourselves, so we'll buy something or do what everybody else wants, that is a bit of a flex, you know, in these times.
I totally agree. And if you find yourself constantly being in judgment of others, chances are you're hyper in judgment of yourself. And when you look at the bigger woman, to your point, with the hot guy, instead of going, ugh, I don't get how that works, it's like, oh my gosh, that looks amazing. And I know that kind of love is coming to me as well. I bet they're really happy, right? I have clients do this all the time. Look around in the world, and instead of going, ew, why is she wearing those shoes? Be like, you know what? Change that story. She is so smart. I bet she's way more comfortable and way happier at this event than other people are. It's so smart of her to do that. Flip that story, because the minute you start to do that, you'll turn that compassion on yourself.
Yes. Oh, yes, yes, yes. And also because people, it's not your shoes. Like, wearing the right shoes is not going to get you the relationship you want. Like, if that's what it's going to come down to, like the shoes that you're wearing, you know, in terms of who you choose to be with or who chooses you, then something is really off in that mix. If your size is going to determine like who picks you, that person does not deserve to be in a relationship with you, right? You need to be loved of whatever size you're at. You need to be loved on whatever pair of shoes you're in, whatever outfit you're in, whatever hair you have, whatever skin color you have, whatever is going on with you. And the way that you're judging others, as you said, Bella, is very much about also the way that you're judging you. And it's like you're hyperfixating on these little details. And it's like, I remember I had a list way back in the day on my old personal blog. I had something like 28 things that a guy needs to avoid if he wants to date me. There are things in there like no white socks and sandals, which is now all the rage, you know, in these times. But I was like, mustn't be obsessed with sports, mustn't be into sci-fi, mustn't disturb me in the middle of CSI, because obviously this is like 20 plus years ago. That stuff is, I was only showing my immaturity about relationships at that point. My husband loves sci-fi. He watches sports religiously.
Wears white goes socks to church. And sandals and
yeah,
rocks
he did, doesn't. Yeah, he doesn't wear white socks and sandals, thankfully. Although, do you know what? Actually, I don't know if I would do it now, but I can actually, I've seen people and be like, okay, you do your thing. But what's hilarious is if he had put that information out there, like let's say in these modern times, like on his profile, I might have been like, oh, well, we're not a match, because he goes to, like, he prays every day, or he goes to church, or, you know, he's into sci-fi or sports. I would have written him off. And I think that a lot of us do that because we take these things, their hobbies and interests, honestly, it's not a thing. That's not going to tell you how compatible you are.
It
really doesn't matter. And I've seen people have the best, like when I say seen, not literally watch them, by the way, I must correct my phrase in there. But I have spoken, you know, to clients and they'd be like, oh my gosh, we had the most amazing sex. The relationship is terrible. What's the point in having great sex in a terrible relationship? In a relationship that can't go anywhere, or even in a relationship that's not even going to be a relationship. We need to get our priorities right. And I think that when we do, we can align to a more truthful, boundaried, loving, intimate version of ourselves. Because, you know, no boundaries, no intimacy, i.e. no, if you're not being yourself, you don't get to experience intimacy, and intimacy is what you need to be in a genuinely loving relationship, a loving, fulfilling relationship.
So I'm going to bring this home with, I think, the point that I found so interesting about what you said, and I agree with. From your own story, you had a wake-up call. Your health changed everything. And at a certain point, and I might be putting words in your mouth, feel free to correct me, but at what I want to highlight with this is that you were then at like, F it. I'm not going to accept A, B, C, D, E, F, G anymore. Like, I am going to have standards. And if you don't meet those standards, bye, boy. Like, you're done. And that didn't take you 30 years of therapy. And
no.
A change can happen in an instant. Ladies
yes.
and gentlemen, change happens in an instant. It happened to Natalie, okay? And it happens all the time. It's a decision that you make, right? You can go through all the therapy in the world. No shade on therapists. I love therapy. Most of my clients are in therapy as well as coaching. But at a certain point, the change is going to come from within. It's not going to come from without, from the outside. And you are going to at one point say, I am a complete and perfect pot just as I am. And from now on, from this day forward, I will not accept A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J. And if somebody comes along and mistreats you, it is bless and release them.
Yes.
And change doesn't have to mean you have to go in and do something for 10 years. Decide today that you are only going to accept that your pot is amazing as it is. And we all have little dings and nicks on our pots, right? And they're not always visible. That's fine. But how is your pot going to be treated? And that's what I want you to sit with. And you don't need to wait 10 years to get out there and change those standards. So love is out there for you as you are right now. And if you need help because you don't know what being treated well even looks like, there's so much help that you can get out there, right? And so I know this is what we do at Smart Dating Academy. This is when you decide that moment, when you sit in your power and you stand in your power and you're like, okay, my pot is ready for a good lid. I might not know how to identify a good lid. Then you enlist a service like mine, but you have to decide my pot is complete as it is. So when you make that decision, ladies and gentlemen, the world is about to change for the better for you. So Natalie, any parting words of wisdom for you to our dear listeners?
I mean, that was so powerful what you were saying there. And you are so right. You know, I think that it's very easy to sit there and judge ourselves for where we have been on our journey. But none of us had a genie turn up on our 18th birthday with a glowing book, you know, manual with instructions for life, right? We've had to figure this out as we go. And you need to give yourself a bit of grace here. And also, you got to stop ignoring, dismissing, and overriding yourself. What is it that wants to be seen here? What is it that you are not listening to? Don't wait until somebody's telling you you've got to go on steroids for life or you're going to be dead by the age of 40 for you to finally be like, oh, actually, okay, finally, I'll turn around and listen to myself. That is what happens for a lot of us, but you don't have to wait for that moment. But don't judge yourself because of where you've been and what you've been through, right? Because we all have emotional baggage. And it only takes one person in the end. I've been in one healthy, loving, intimate relationship. The rest of my relationship TV is shitty as hell, right? But it helped. They were the stepping stones to get into where I needed to. That decision that Bella refers to, once you make that decision and you align, when you're willing to like have that wake-up call, even if you have your moments of trying to dodge it, which is human, but when you start to align with who you are, who you want to be, how you want to feel and continue feeling, you will not accept less from somebody else than you can already be and do for yourself.
Amen. Amen. I love what you said. Take that to the church. So you have been amazing. I feel like we could talk for 8 hours. I'm so glad that I have a new friend across the Atlantic.
Absolutely.
And if people want to read more about you, give us your social handles. Tell us where we can find you.
So the website is baggagereclaim.com. So there it's got like blog and the podcast, the baggage reclaim sessions, and also options for working with me. On my social, Instagram is Nat Lue. That's NATLUE. I have just very recently finally started to use TikTok. So I'm the Natalie Lue on TikTok. So TheNatalieLue. And so I'm posting, you know, little nuggets on there each day and having actually quite a bit of fun with it, surprising myself with that. But yeah, please do come and say hello. And of course, there is my book, The Joy of Saying No, you know, a simple plan to reclaim boundaries, stop people pleasing and say yes to the life you want.
You've been amazing. Thank you so much for being on the podcast today. I appreciate it. And smart daters, I hope you have stood in your power. And maybe today is the day that proverbial asteroid hit you listening to this conversation going, oh my God, I am worthy of this. And I'm going to make decisions and I'm going to decide to be investing in myself and saying, I am worth this. And if this is your day, get on my website, smartdatingacademy.com. Fill out a form because you are worth it and you can pick the perfect lid to your pot with just a little bit of help. So until the next episode, I bid you nothing but love and grace. Thanks for listening. And as always, download us, share us, show us the love. Follow Instagram at Smart Dating Academy. And if you or someone you know wants to learn more, check out our website at smartdatingacademy.com. We're here to bring you love.